Good morning. This is meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. It is Wednesday, May 1st, 2019, and the time is 8:07. Members present are co-chair Representative Harriet Drummond, Representative Greyer Hopkins, Representative Tiffany Zilkowski, and Representative Josh Rivak. We have a quorum to conduct business. Oh, and myself, Representative Andy Story. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Selman Holland, and Taylor Kelly is our LIO moderator, assisting with teleconference and support. Thank you both. Today, we have one item on the agenda, House Bill 75, Internet Services for School Districts. I'd like to recognize that the bill sponsor, Representative Rasmussen, and her staff are with us, and looks like Charlotte's here today too. That's great, her daughter. We also have staff from the Department of Education and Early Development who are going to be available to answer questions on the bill, Patience Fredrickson and Heidi Teschner, thank you. I would like to adopt the committee substitute we have before us as the working document. I'd like to note that we met with Representative Rasmussen and discussed this beforehand. Representative Drummond.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt committee substitute 31-LS0574/M of House Bill 75 as the working document for the Education Committee.
I'd like to invite my aide, Mary Hakala, forward to explain the changes to the bill, please.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Mary Hakala, aide, House Committee aide to Representative Story. There are two changes in the draft committee substitute. First, the CS removes language, a minimum of, returning the program to its current structure, which provides a focused subsidy that addresses inequity in internet across access between schools in the state. By returning to this approach, the bill addresses the goal of bringing all schools up to a minimum of 25 megabits from the current standard of 10. The second is the revenue source change. It switches the program's revenue source from the Higher Education Fund to general funds. And that is reflected in the fiscal note. You will see that's draft dated for 3019. Those are the two changes. It brings the bill into alignment with the Senate companion that is in Senate Finance at this time. Are there?
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hakala, you said it would bring the applicant's share to a minimum of 25 megabits, but that's not what the bill.
Okay,
that's not what the CS
says. It removes the language "a minimum of." So, the school districts that would qualify are those that are not yet at 25 megabits. They, just as the current law, the school districts that need assistance to get to 10 megabits. And no further, I mean, they do not have additional capacity. That is who the law and the subsidy focuses on. This would provide a directed subsidy to those districts that need assistance to get to 25 megabits. So it would be only for those schools receiving the benefit of the state subsidy. All school districts are eligible for the E-rate funds. But previous language would have authorized spending, essentially, it would effectively have changed the nature of the program so that all districts across the state qualified. It would change the fiscal note dramatically because all school districts would be eligible for the cost of 25 megabits.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Ms. Hakala? Thank you. I'd now like to invite the department staff to come forward and walk through the fiscal note dated 4/30/19.
Good
Good morning, and please introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, Patience Fredrickson, Director of the Alaska Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums in the Department of Education and Early Development. Okay. The fiscal note is for the portion of the program that it will cost to get schools from 10 megabits to 25 megabits. In the first year of operation, it will cost 7.169.4. On the narrative of the fiscal note, on the third paragraph down, it discusses that the cost of the program to get schools from 0 to 10 megabits per second is 1.4875. That amount of the money will also need to be allocated annually along with the 7.169.4 in all the out years. What we will do is we will treat those two sources, those two funds, as a unified program, but this is what the bill will actually cost to get the schools from 10 to 25. Over the out years of the grant, you can see that there's a deduction. It's a reduction of 3% annually. This is what has happened during the 5 years of the School Bag at 10 program. We've seen an ongoing reduction in the cost per school, and also we've seen a reduction in the number of schools in the program. We started high and it went lower. I believe that pretty much explains it. The other change to the fiscal note here is that the FCC list that we used to create the first fiscal note posited 245 schools that needed help to get to 25 megabits. We looked at that more closely and we realized that some schools were getting two types of internet support through E-rate, and so we backed out the duplicates. We're now down to 172 schools that need support to get to 10 megabits. So that also impacted the fiscal note. As you can see, the way we figured it, 172 schools. In FY 2019, it cost $16,594 to get those schools on average up to 10. Then we multiplied by 172, and then we said to get from 10 to 25 megabits, you multiply by a factor of 2.5. And that's where we come up with the 7.135420.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Fredrickson. I'm confused by the double applications in place for E-rate. Does that mean that those schools were receiving two sets of grant funds? And so they actually received more, twice as much money as they should have?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond. No. When they apply for E-rate for a school bag under 10, they through the E-rate program, they can get internet like a direct line to a school and then also have a WAN, a wide area network, and they're able to apply for both a circuit that connects all the schools and a direct line to the school. And E-rate will cover both, but they have to apply for each individually. When we look at the applications for the school bag, we also look at their E-rate applications in the spring. And if they get more than 10 in those two ways, then we back them out of the program. They're not eligible. So we just had to clean up the list we used for the original fiscal note.
Follow up?
Yes.
So this then allows those schools to go from 10 to 25 through this bill, should this bill pass?
Yes.
And should the funding materialize?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Drummond.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. Any other questions? Okay, thank you for your work on that. I would now like to invite Alexi Painter, Legislative Financial Fiscal Analysis, to come forward. Mr. Painter is going to provide a brief description of the federal disparity test. He's going to describe how the E-rate funds factor into disparity calculations. It's going to help us assess whether E-rate funds pose a risk to the state in meeting the federal disparity test and outline consequences of failing the disparity test. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So briefly, I'll try to go through this pretty quickly and not get bogged down into the K-12 formula, but the federal government provides impact aid to school districts, and that's based on a number of factors relating to federal activity or Alaska Native land held in trust that is not taxable, or you know, the presence of federal military personnel and so forth. Not every district receives this, but many do, and some receive quite a bit of money. But some districts, like the MATSU, for example, does not receive any federal impact aid. Federal law allows the state to deduct a portion of that impact aid from the state share of the K-12 foundation formula. And that amount varies, but usually it's about $80 to $90 million a year that we are able to deduct from the state share. And that means that the districts receive that money, but we can count it towards the $1.2 billion that we pay for the K-12 formula. If we could not deduct this aid, the districts would still receive that. However, our cost as a state would go up by $80 to $90 million a year. So it's really a benefit to the state, not necessarily to the districts, although, of course, if we had less money to spend, perhaps that would flow down to the districts. However, the federal government only allows us to deduct federal impact aid if we keep what's called an equalized formula. And so that means that the disparities between the best funded districts in the state and the lowest funded districts cannot be more than 25%. And that provision is why the state limits the outside the formula contributions by local municipalities to 23%. In theory, that 23% would keep us below 25 and we'd never have a disparity problem. And indeed, historically, we have passed the disparity test. Many states do not, but we do, and that enables us to deduct that aid, which is a great cost savings for the state for our education formula. However, E-rate poses a bit of a challenge for this test because mostly this test is applying to state and local money, which we are in control of as a state. E-rate money also counts for the disparity test, and that's because internet is just one of the general fund expenditures of the schools. It's not a special fund. It's just one of the things they do. So if they get revenue that they can then spend on internet, it goes and counts towards disparity. And because internet is much more expensive in certain districts than others, some districts receive quite a bit more E-rate money. And specifically, Lower Kuskokwim District in the Bethel area receives a disproportionate amount of E-rate. So in the disparity test, historically, before we had all this E-rate money coming in, the top districts after, you know, the North Slope Borough and ones like that that have a lot of funding, the top districts were usually the best funded municipal school districts that had a large local contribution. With E-rate, that's shifted a bit. The district that we use as the cutoff, because we can drop the top and bottom 5% so we don't have outliers making us fail. The top district in the FY18 test was actually Lower Kuskokwim, even though they don't have a local contribution because they receive so much E-rate money. And so this bill would direct more funding to districts like that and allow them to receive even more E-rate money. And that poses a problem for the disparity test. The projections that the department has for the amount of funding that would come in could be as much as an additional 30% of Lower Kuskokwim's budget in E-rate money. So it's a huge amount of money. It's very impactful to the district, and it's mostly paid for by the federal government. Normally, we'd say that's a great thing. However, if we can't do anything about that, that would cause us to fail the disparity test quite handily. If you plug just that in, you get something like a 40% disparity. Remember, we can only have 25. So to address this issue, the department has gone to the federal government and asked for permission to not count E-rate for disparity, either by creating a special revenue fund for E-rate and for internet or some other methodology. They've reached out recently and requested permission. We don't know yet whether that will be granted. If it is, and we can disregard E-rate from the disparity test, then we would, based on the FY18 disparity test anyway, we would still pass, and even, you know, regardless of whether this bill passed. So that should address it, assuming that the federal government gives permission, and we just don't know at this point what the federal government will say. They said they say currently that they're doing more research, so they'll get back to us. So hopefully that was clear enough. Happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Painter, for your explanation. At some point, I'd love to have a written explanation of the formula, so to speak. So the department is asking the feds for permission to essentially ignore the E-rate funds from the foundation formula and thus keep them from helping to determine the compliance with the disparity test. The way I look at Alaska, we're down here near western Georgia. I live in approximately border of Missouri and Kansas, and the Lower Kuskokwim School District is out around, I don't know, Arizona, maybe. Do the feds realize that they're seeking to administer a grant program that spans dozens of states in the lower 48 in terms of the size of our state and the unique needs of our state?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I think that's, you know, kind of the pitch that the state is making, that, mm-hmm. you know, given the state's geography, we do need perhaps to consider that outside the formula. And it's not really unprecedented to, you know, exclude certain parts. The disparity test only applies to, you know, the school's equivalent of their general fund. So pupil transportation, for example, is already outside it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it wouldn't be that unusual perhaps to exclude something, but I don't know that any other state has had, you know, no other states have E-rate differences that are anywhere near as great as we do in Alaska. So it's a bit unique.
Thank you.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 25%, what does that apply to? Is it 25% of what the state gives to each student? Is it 25% of the total overall funding that the state gives?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, the federal government allows us to do this based on our adjusted average daily membership. So it's the per adjusted student that we apply the BSA to. If they did it just based on pure students, then we wouldn't succeed. But they do, knowing that states have geographic differences and so forth, they do allow us to do it on adjusted students. So it's the revenue that they receive from per adjusted student.
So does that mean that our district cost factors, when some of our districts are 2-1, I think it's UConn, Flats, and Anchorage, how does that play into the disparity factor?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, that is what gets you from the student to the adjusted student, are all those factors. So they allow us to take that into account, and just given our, you know, our geographic disparities, that allows us to, we adjust for that, and then we plug it into the disparity test. So that's already factored in, which helps us greatly, and that's why we're able to pass, is because we have a formula that accounts for all those things.
One more follow-up, sorry.
Follow-up.
Does that help us avoid the 25% by bringing the UConn Koyukuk up, or is it supposed to bring the Anchorage one down, I guess, with my bad math language?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, I suppose that since they're relative, it's not, it brings every district up. I mean, the formula, you know, even Anchorage, one student counts as more than one when you run it through the BSA formula. So it brings everybody up, but it brings those rural districts up more, so they're able to, when we equalize on adjusted average daily membership, we provide as a state the exact same funding to all of them. We provide the BSA to every district. So since we're providing the same amount to every district, they start on equal footing. And then if there's local funding, then that would, you know, tip some districts above others, or if there's, you know, E-rate currently, that would tip some districts above others. But just based on state funding, they all receive the same amount in the disparity test.
Thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Painter? Seeing none, thank you very much. There are a few questions for the department. I'd like to hear from the department on their approach to solving the issues related to E-rate funding impacting the federal disparity test. I'd invite Ms. Heidi Teschner to come forward.
Good morning. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education Early Development, and with me this morning is Ellen Blackwell, our School Finance Manager. So, as Mr. Painter had stated, we, the department, have reached out to the federal government inquiring about removing E-rate from a school district's operating fund and having that being reported in a special revenue fund in order to, for E-rate not to negatively impact the federal disparity test. And so, as Mr. Painter stated, we are still waiting to hear back from their decision makers on whether or not we have approval to do that.
Okay. When is that issue likely to be resolved?
Chair Story, we do not have a set timeline. We did speak with them yesterday morning, and they were passing on our additional information to their decision makers. Unfortunately, it was a few weeks ago when we initially reached out to them, so it's hard to say exactly when we'll get a final answer.
Okay, so you're not sure when that's going to be?
Correct.
Okay. Robertson-Derman.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Teschner. When does the department typically complete the disparity calculations?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, by the end of February is when that calculation is due to the feds.
Follow up?
Yes.
So okay. That's essentially done for FY19, or is it 20?
So for and through the chair, Representative Drummond. So we just submitted this past February the FY20's calculation. So ability to take to have an equalized formula in FY20.
Okay. And if suppose this bill passed and the funding materialize, is there a reasonable path forward if the state finds itself in a position of failing the disparity test without having received permission from the feds to change the way we look at the disparity test?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, if I'm understanding your question, so if the bill moves forward and we don't have approval from the feds, it's very probable that the state will fail the disparity test based on the fact of the projections we have for the E-rate and those being included in the school district's operating funds.
Venture?
Yes.
And what happens if we fail the disparity test? What do we not receive?
So through the chair, Representative Drummond, the state will not be able to have, basically we would not have an equalized formula, therefore we would not be able to take impact aid into consideration as one of the three funding sources that pays for the foundation program.
Following up on Representative Drummond's question, how much money would that be to the state?
Chair Story, right now it's about $82 million. But as Alexi Painter said, it ranges between $80 and $90 million each, mm-hmm. depending on what districts apply for.
Thank you. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. Do we have a federal waiver for any of our other funding formula attributes?
I'm not, through the chair, Representative Hopkins, I'm not quite sure I understand your question. So right now, we don't really have any other waivers that I'm aware of.
I guess it was just a question of does the federal government have a history of understanding the predicament and questions that we ask in terms of how it impacts our geography? Or have they denied waivers, or have we never asked for something like this? And specifically not on the disparity test, but on any of these things.
To our knowledge, we do not know of us asking for any kind of a waiver for the for the disparity test.
Right, that's the first time
later.
For everything.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions for the department? Okay. Brief at ease. I wanted to note that my staff has been working with the department legislative finance and Senate finance staff on contingency language to address the federal disparity issue. Late yesterday, like after 7 p.m., I would want to say, we received a draft amendment for conditional language, which is, if Ms. Hakala could distribute that to members now, I thought it important that we look at this today. We've not had the chance to thoroughly review the language. So as we're looking at this right now, as members look at it, I recommend that we forward it on separately to the House Finance Committee for final action. I think it's important that House Finance, since they'll be dealing with the financial issues, that they have this perhaps language to put in here, which just says adopting this conditional upon that we receive the federal disparity, a waiver from the disparity test. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what the procedure is in terms of discussing an amendment without really moving it, but I think my question to you and your staff would be, does the Senate finance staff believe that a similar amendment is in order for the Senate version of the bill, which is already considerably further along than this bill?
Ms. Hakala, could you address that question, please? And please introduce yourself again for the record.
For the record, Mary Hakala, A2, Representative Andy Story. In conversations with Senate Finance staff and Senator Hoffman's staff, they are looking at potential language, and also my understanding is a letter to the federal government as well, kind of a twofold effort. We haven't received, and to my knowledge, they have not received any draft specific language, conditional language yet. So kind of in that slight vacuum, I sent forward the request to Legislative Legal and was quite surprised at how quickly they were able to turn it around. So we thought it would be valuable to bring it forward as a discussion item. And as Representative Story stated, we've not had the chance to circulate this amongst those who really need to give feedback and weigh in, and including we wanted to give also the Senate folks who are working on the bill and trying to address this very same issue the chance to look at it as well. And Finance Committee would be a place where they will be dealing with the fiscal implications, so it would be appropriate that they too can simply tackle it as we move forward.
Yes, Representative Reback.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Is the sponsor aware of this, and do they have any input, or I'd like to hear the thoughts from the sponsor.
Sure, yes. Representative Rasmussen, please come forward.
And for the record, just I might note, because we got it so late last night, I gave Representative Rasmussen a copy this morning, so she too has not had chance to you know, really review it, or you know, none of us have, so I wanted to add respect for
yes.
Well, maybe while she comes forward, this is just conditional that they meet the requirements for the federal funding. Is that right?
Correct.
And nothing else, just that they meet those requirements?
Yes, because my understanding is we do not want to lose the revenue that we would, the $98
million. Okay.
Thank you for the record. My name is Sarah Rasmussen, representative to District 22. And through the chair, Representative Reback, As Representative Story's aide just noted, I did just get a copy of the amendment. I do feel that it's a friendly amendment to the bill. I certainly wouldn't want any legislation to impact the disparity test. I believe that this is a very important piece of legislation, and I'm hoping that we can work out the kinks to move it forward. So I'm open to the concept.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, and thank you for coming forward. Any other questions? It is my intent to move the bill on to House Finance, which is the next committee of referral, where its fiscal implications and draft contingency language can be addressed. I really believe that it's important to pass House Bill 75 this year, so students across the state can benefit as soon as possible. We've heard from the department the benefits of increased internet access will already be delayed by a year given the school district E-rate application window, which is already passed. So we don't want that to be a two-year delay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Zilkowski.
Thank you. Just a clarifying question, recognizing that the bill sponsor acknowledges the amendment as a friendly amendment. I just want to make sure that I understand the intention is to forward this language to House Finance for consideration for incorporating it into the bill. Is that correct?
That is correct. What we are just moving out is our original MS committee substitute this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for clarifying that. Are there any other questions on House Bill 75? Okay, if members do not have any further comments, I propose that we move this bill today. Representative Drummond.
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill 75, Work Draft 31-LS0574, /M, from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and updated fiscal note dated 4/30/19.
Seeing no objections, the bill passes. I'm going to take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Our next meeting of the House Education Committee will be Friday, May 3rd, 2019 at 8 a.m. And so I will adjourn us.